is mindfulness of fear, and it's done in response to a request from a community member. Happy to be able to respond to the request. So we're going to engage in a process that I call circumambulating, where we're walking around fear as a phenomenon. And as we walk around it, we're looking at it from different views, different perspectives. And as we do that, that has a kind of spiraling into the depth of our understanding of fear, because one aspect leads us to kind of see the next aspect a little more subtly, or one aspect that didn't register so much when we look at another aspect where that's some, oh yeah, that's really, I get that, then suddenly what we've looked at before becomes more real too. And when you're at in Bodhgaya at Mahabodhi Temple, that's what you do. You always walk with your right shoulder around the place where the Buddha got enlightened. And so that has been my analogy for 20-some years of how to understand something rather than just this one way over and over again, to shift perspectives. And I do this in my work with people around changes and transitions as well, this circumambulating. It's been very useful to me in my own practice. So, you know, you have your own relationship to fear, right? Everybody's got their own history with fear. One has a very understanding of the word fear can really vary. What it means to you might not be what it means to the person sitting next to you this evening. You also will have a different relationship with fear depending on the circumstances. So fear, you may have a general view of fear meaning one thing in your mind, but boy, if something really fearful is happening right now, it's got a whole other meaning to you. And maybe not. We all have our own experience of this. Likewise, what I term the fear body. Each of us have our own fear body, and that fear body is consisting of mental activity, emotional activity, and physical sensation, the fear body. And the fear body can be a little bit activated, dramatically activated, and so forth, this fear body. And different kinds of fear may elicit different manifestations in the fear body. The fear body, think of it as those levels of consciousness, going through the nine bodies teachings, those levels of consciousness that are activated around fear, whatever fear means to you. So, what is fear? What is fear? What do we mean by fear? So think for a moment about, if you had to give a definition, what would you give? And you're not trying to be dictionary perfect. You're trying to, the aspiration is to, right now, in listening to this exploration, like, huh, what do I mean by fear? And so other times you might mean something different. That's okay. But right now, if you're going to say, well, right now for me, fear is da-da-da. Not so much, it might be like, oh, I'm fear for our country, or I'm fearful about this test that I took on Friday but don't have the results yet. It's not the object of your fear, but what you mean by the, what is you mean by as an experience, what is the experience of fear? However you take that word experience. So I'll just do a quick one. Fear is an emotional response. It's an emotional response. It's a mind state. It's an emotional mind state. When I say response, it's a really It could be a reaction or a response. That's the way I make those distinctions, and I'll make those distinctions again tonight between reaction and response. But it is an emotional relationship that you're having to a perceived danger of indeterminate time. Something that happened in the past and you're still afraid about it. Something's happening at the present, or something that you perceive is going to happen or is likely to happen or might happen in the future. So it's a mind state. It is an emotional mind state that is arising based on a perception. The perception may be accurate, sort of accurate, maybe accurate, or not accurate at all. That isn't the point at this level of being mindful. We're treating what we is arising as having legitimacy because it's arising, not because of the degree of accuracy. It's too late to have a wise response if we're just waiting until we know if it's accurate or not. So the wise response starts happening with the recognition, as we'll talk about recognition much more later. And in the dictionary, they refer to it as an unpleasant emotional state of mind. But that, of course, is not always true, because we go out and scare ourselves on those rides I hate, you know, or we scare ourselves going fast in an automobile, which I love, but of which I have definitely scared myself at doing 140, 150 miles an hour. So it maybe it's not so pleasant, or maybe it's unpleasant, but it's the unpleasant for the value of getting not afraid. So, and that's very pleasant. So it's a little more complicated maybe than unpleasant. An emotional state of fear can be unpleasant, but also entertaining. And we can also choose to be afraid of one thing, because if we weren't afraid of that, we'd be afraid of something that's much more difficult for us. So we're choosing to be afraid of this because it's actually safer for us. It's more, we know how to work with this fear, but if we weren't having this fear, we'd have another fear that's more unfamiliar to us, or just more charged in some way. We have this interplay of conscious and unconsciousness that goes on. Whether you believe there's an unconscious or not, we know there's lots of unconscious activity that goes on, that I don't think anyone can deny that this day and age. And so this unpleasant emotional state is often, but not always, but usually often, characterized by anticipation of pain, physical or mental pain, or of great distress, or that there's going to be a kind of a loss or a failure or an impending kind of disaster, some in impending dread. There's an impending, oh no, like, or you know, whatever the things are. And this can be accompanied by a lot of response in our nervous system. We can have agitation in our stomach. We can have our eyes burning. We can have this kind of clutching in the throat. We can have this kind of growing cold or growing totally hot. All of these different kinds of nervous system responses. And of course, we also get into the trauma responses of fight, flight, or freeze, which I'll also come back to in a moment. From my view, it is an internal experience that has outward manifestation. That is, one can feel one's skin, or someone can feel your skin, and all this. So it's going inside but coming outward, and then it can lead to physical action, to mental activity. It can lead to acute perception or fuzziness of perception. It can lead to acute hearing or not being able to hear at all. All of these these different sense experiences. So that's kind of the way we usually think of fear. But another way we could experience fear is through this kind of calm knowing. Oh, I'm afraid. And there's not all that accompanying thing. That's simply recognition of fear. Fear feels like this. But it's still fear. It's still fear. And one would think automatically, oh, that calm recognition of fear will automatically lead to wisdom. Maybe you're not paying enough attention. You should be more afraid and be having more of that immediate fight or flight and get out of there and not just recognize, but get out of the way of this person who's gunning for someone to get upset with. And you're feeling that, so just leave the room. You know, so it's not this calm recognition, which I tend to have a lot of, has usually served me quite well, but in a few times it's really not been helpful. I didn't have enough investigation. That too much calm was not creating the sense of investigation that was appropriate. So I was not having an appropriate response because of too much equanimity. It was more interesting to me than referencing of what is an appropriate, you know, relationship to this feeling of fear arises. You can track that, right? So in general, for most of the time, for most of us, a more dose of calm recognition, more equanimity is useful, but not always. And certainly in an acute situation where, like, a car is entering your lane, I'll use this analogy again, a car is entering your lane, you cannot have, the equanimity is great, but there's no time to examine your experience. You just need to get out of the way of your natural response. I've had this happen a number of times driving automobiles, and not because I like to drive fast. I don't drive fast anymore, at least not compared to what I did when I was a young person. But I've had it. I have dodged a truck that came into my lane going around a curve in which I had traffic on the other side. And I only had a moment to go like that to miss the truck. I've had a truck having tires on these hooks on its side. All the tires fall off and come bouncing towards me. I've had a trailer drop off a car in front and this trailer wandering in both lanes. And me. And so I once on the freeway had a car hit a railing and turn around and coming right back straight towards me. Why the car didn't stop, I never figured out. But one just responds. One just stays in the moment and responds. And so those are like immediate things. Another immediate kind of thing is you're walking down the street and it doesn't feel like a good idea to keep walking on that side of the street. It just, some intuition is saying, something's off here. You go into a store, you turn around and go the other way. You trust your intuition. That's an intuitive response to fear. So the fear is one thing, then the response is another, a reaction or response. Sometimes we are counterphobic, in the sense that's a term that's used in relation to fear. When we have fear, we move towards the fear. Sometimes that's wise, sometimes it's not wise. We learn to develop through this circumambulating our understanding of what's a wise response and a not wise response to fear. And of course, we'll get into these different levels of fear. I'll do that in a moment. So fear can be from a switching percept, you know, we're circumambulating here. Now we can look at fear as a pattern. Oh, so here's this old habit of mine of fear. Oh, I'm in relationship. I'm getting close to someone. Oh, here comes my old friend fear to watch out for me as I try to open to another person. Oh, was they really safe? Or they're really going to reject me later on, da-da-da, whatever it is. Or in relation to a job situation. I'm in this new job and, you know, they're not really going to like me, these people. You're afraid that you're not going to be well received in this job. It is not helpful, I must say. I've worked with people around this where their fear pattern in a new situation, so does the men. They don't give themselves a chance. And it can be very hard to break that. I've worked with one person for many, many years to just get this basic core new situation to have choice in that. Years, because it was so early on, it was so imposed, and a voice of a parent was part of that. Sometimes it was them thinking this, and sometimes this voice of a parent that was showing up in their head. It'd be very difficult. But the mindfulness, the compassion, everything that we learn in Buddha Dharma, so helpful in that. So another perspective of circumambulating is that we can experience fear as an alarm, a sudden apprehension, We can become suddenly apprehensive. There could be a sudden feeling of dismay. We can lose any sense of courage of having a backbone. And it just, poof, there we are. But we can be just as mindful of this as anything else. We can be interested in it in the same way. We can be meeting that with a curiosity, with a kindness, with a compassion. And so that our interest is larger than this suddenness of this alarm feeling. And we have more choice. We have more agency in relation to how we respond to the situation. And again, I'm talking about situations where it's not like the car coming into that lane or the trailer dropping off the truck and coming towards me. There's no examination of that. You're just in immediate movement. That's not what I'm talking about. But the fear feeling arising, every fear for you or many feelings for you can feel that immediate as though the car's coming into your lane. Although in reflection, that's not true. This kind of fear you have time to have an exploration of, to find choice in relation to. But you don't know that because it's so ingrained. You go into it as though it were an immediate threat in a way that it's not immediate. This can happen to you at work. It can happen to people and where they have to make sudden calls like in the financial markets or like a referee having to make a call and they just freeze. They can't make a call. And so they can go on in the game for a while the other referees are blowing their whistle. But literally, they are like, they've lost it. They can't, they've lost their sense that they can know what's a foul or not a foul and so forth. It can happen in any profession. I don't want to bring up someone that would be more dramatic. That's not helpful. but they do happen. I've been told about them. Another perspective is that the fear arises as discouragement, as an intense doubt of yourself, of not believing that it's possible. You're sitting in a retreat, and you immediately believe you can't do this retreat. And it's like you're convinced, you're absolutely convinced, or you're convinced that that you don't belong in the retreat, that you're going to disturb others, that your very presence is going to disturb others. And people can believe that they're moving around so much that everybody's hearing them move around. But when I open my eyes to watch them, since they're reporting this in a practice meeting with me, they're not actually moving hardly at all. And yet they really believe they're moving a lot. That is, their perception is real, even though the perception itself is false. But their perception is real. Do you see that difference? Because we want to be mindful of the perception first. We don't want to treat something as bogus till we've known it. But then we learn right away that, oh, the likelihood is this is not a genuine perception in us. So we don't have to every time go prove it because it's proven to be false over and over again. And therefore we dispel a kind of faith we're having in a kind of perception that's delusion. There's the thing of wanting, of aversion, of restlessness, of sloth and torpor, and then of doubt and all this, and that doubt is a kind of delusion. Or again, just the wanting and aversion and delusion, that there's delusion, and that we learn, okay, this is delusion. So we take the fear by giving it respect of mindfulness, and everything is to be respected with mindfulness. Everything. So that we really know it, we're willing to receive it. And that, but then we learn, and so therefore we don't stay, we don't have to learn over and over again, we learn. And if we're not learning after it happening over and over again, there's some reason that we're choosing not to. And we want to go, okay, I'm recognizing that I'm not choosing, although over and over again this is proved to not be true. Why am I continuing to treat it as though it's probably true when it's clearly not true? Why? Why? And if I can't know why I am doing that, which would be like, what do I get out of this? What am I? Whatever that all may be. Then we say, okay, do I have a choice to not do it? Even though I don't know why I'm doing it, is there any space around this? Oh, I'm feeling this and I know it's not true. I'm feeling this, I know it's not true. And we don't, where we don't let it go in. Different ways of working with this. I'm not trying to do that kind of how to work with each of these, but some of these, for various reasons, I'm going into more detail now. There can also arise a different perspective, is that we feel the temporary confusion that comes with fear. And it's the recognition that we're confused that empowers us. I'm just confused now. I'm just confused. There's certain situations in my life where I will feel that confusion. Not many, but I will feel confused. My mind gets confused. And I'm not, you know, there's a greed type, an aversion type, and a deluded type. I am a greed aversion type, so I don't tend to be deluded as much as a deluded type would be, or someone who's secondarily deluded, like I'm secondarily aversive type. And so when there's something that I'm uncertain about, and it will usually be more, oh, am I doing something that's inappropriate in some way? Am I not being respectful of something, or not being respectful of someone's feelings? And I will get I'll get alarmed about that, because I want to be respectful of someone's feelings. And my response to being concerned about that, my mind will have a little bit of confusion for a moment, right? You know what I mean by this? And so what's the antidote? Is to just stay, to not feed the confusion. I just stay with the feeling of that, drop back into the body, and wait till there's more choice where my mind can be something different, rather than like trying to fix it all at once. But sometimes what do? I try to fix it all at once, and the other person's going, what? my response, because I'm in reactive mind state, it's not an appropriate response. I was just acting out of my confusion. That was my movie in my head. It didn't have anything to do with the circumstance. Had I just paused longer, there would have been a different alternative. So, I'm going to continue going through these, but fear is normal. It's normal. It's very healthy in many instances. When that trailer came off the back of that truck, I definitely needed the message of this. Whoa, this is dangerous. When the car turned around and started coming towards me, I needed to be alert. I was not overly, I didn't have a huge amount of fear, because it was a three-lane highway, and there was a little, shoulder girdle too. So I wasn't overly, I was having a conversation actually with my yoga teacher at the time when all that was happening, and I never broke my conversation. And later on, the yoga teacher, who had not been all that impressed with me, I must say, said, you know, that was pretty impressive that you... But I had confidence, because I had so many alternatives that, that I felt like I could respond. And when the truck came into my lane going around the curve, no time. No thing. It was just react right then, because it was so fast. If I tried to figure out what to do, I would never have done it. I would have either wrecked with the truck that was coming, or a car that I had to let kind of halfway or a third way go into their lane just for a moment. So I'm using me as an example, because I feel fine talking about my fears as opposed to talking about some of your fears that I might know. That doesn't seem appropriate. And so temporary confusion, likewise circumambulating, there can be a feeling of panic arise. And the fear, fear deteriorating into panic is in one sense you can see it as a more intensification of fear, but you can also see it as a collapse that's a result of the fear. And it's not the fear anymore, it's a whole series of collapsing of different abilities, of different facilities we have. More than one way to understand panic. In this regard, and panic is very interesting if it's coming in relatively small amounts. Like if you can't get breath, which for a while I was having trouble. Some of you know, I couldn't get a full breath, and sometimes I couldn't get enough breath that there would start to be an autonomic reaction of panic. My whole system was panicking because it needed a breath, and I would have passed out if I had to get enough breath, I'm sure, so that my brain would get down on the ground and it would get whatever air there was and all. And that was interesting. It was not pleasant. It would be particularly not pleasant when I wake up in that, when I was grasping for breath. That was not pleasant at all. But it was interesting. It was interesting to watch panic without storyline. I didn't have any story about this. It was just a physical sensation that was going on that was enveloping me, that was defining me in that moment without me adding anything to it. And that was interesting too. And this went on for, you know, at least a year and a half at various times in intensity. And that was interesting in terms of understanding panic in that way, because I'm not one who usually panics about things. I can get a little activated, but and that little activation can be inappropriate. But it doesn't have when we're going into panic, we so often screw up and make the situation worse. That's when if you're running for something, you fall down because you panicked and you can't run, and it goes back into trauma and all that. And then another way was we keep circumambulating the fear is that we can see fear as where there is actual terror, where we're in terror, and that's when the fight, flight, freeze can really come in so strong, and oftentimes with terror there is the freeze that comes in that way. But it's just, and again, fear has now taken over the system in such a way that at that level we are close to being the fear itself. We've become one with the fear, maybe. It's one way of understanding that. And then another in this particular, and we'll do other circumambulating, but the last in this one is what some people will define, and it's there in a dictionary definition, in a big dictionary definition, not one of those little short things online, is horror, that we have so much fear that we're experiencing horror. And I don't know about that. I go back and forth about if I think that's still fear. Horrible is different than horror, because to me horror may be more of a reaction to the fear than it's no longer about the horror is not one of object, it's our reaction to what's fearful in some way. It's very tricky because maybe fear, horror really only belongs when there's actually something actually happening and we have horror in relation to that. So if you've had experience with that, I would have you be interested in really what that is and what it means to you. There can also be a culture of fear, and we are living in a time of fear. So culture of fear, time of fear, pointing to the same thing. And this can have these, again, we're circumambulating here. We can have our own fears being amped up because of that we're living in a time of fear, culture of fear, or we can have them occurring more often or with more intensity, or have our way of relating to them being more limited because we're living in a culture of fear. So it really affects our personal experience with our personal fears. And because we can be depressed around fear, this culture of fear, we can become disorganized by it, we can feel helpless by it. So then when we have our own moment of fear, it's really being hijacked by this culture of fear we're living in. It's so affected by it that we would not be the way we'd be responding to this moment of fear were we not caught in this culture of fear, living in this time of fear. And so it's useful to know that. And it's also useful to bring all of our wisdom into play in relation to when we're in a culture of fear. Because in a culture of fear, there's a learned helplessness. There is a kind of frustration, a kind of cynicism that can grow. But if we actually say, no, I'm having a response of, this is all fearful because things are so uncertain, I don't know how much more uncertain there's going to be. And this is starting to define me, and I don't have to let that happen. I can really balance it out. Not perfectly, because we are made uneasy living in a culture of fear. And it's not irrational. That's what makes it so difficult. Because our leadership is irrational, having a nervousness of response to that is a natural response, but it's not a healthy response. So we have to learn to move our attention elsewhere, to say, I have choice. The more I am together, the more I will appropriately respond to any fear that's brought about by larger issues than me. And of course, one of them, our immigrant population having such a culture of fear, in that culture, that's for children, for small children, it would be at the level of terror. What would be a cultural response dealing with a problem that has legitimacy as a problem, but do we really want to create a culture that creates terror in small children? One could argue about that from different points of view. So I have my own view, but we don't do that in here. I don't mention that for political reasons. I mention that to illustrate the culture of fear, and have you understand really what I mean about that. Because for you it might not be that great, but it certainly is for others. It certainly is for others. One of the things about the testimony of the person who gave on Monday was the way she was caught by fear. She was made fearful for her well-being, her physical well-being, her professional status, and all of this. And it was undermining everything. It was undermining everything. So we can have someone that we are afraid of in our family of origin, and we get completely undermined. Someone can marry into the family. They marry someone that's unstable. And we feel fear, and it's a legitimate fear. But then we can actually not be smart enough in how we respond because we're trying not to be just defined by that fear. Or we can way overreact and so forth. It's complicated. It's very complicated. And because we hear constant reports in the way modern media is of families being afraid of someone in the family being unstable. And in fact, it's true oftentimes. So finding our internal balance in this can be difficult. We know, we've heard over and over again, the body, staying embodied, trust in our body. It's also how we find intuition. And intuition is a much better read of fear oftentimes than our thinking mind is. So staying in the body, knowing that any moment is worthy of mindfulness, and that we learn to have space around the moment. All of this is how to investigate. All of this will help us meet fear. A balancing thing here is that we can look at what are the benefits of fear, so that we don't just dislike fear. Fear is often a messenger. So we want to take the message and let loose of all the secondary affects. Oh, I am uneasy around this person. Is this an appropriate feeling or not? Oh, actually, it's pretty appropriate. But then I don't have to get all fidgety or get ashamed of myself or like try to be extra nice because we don't want to offend them. Oh no, it's just fear, and there's a reason for this. There's a message in this. I can treat this person in an arm's length way with civility, but keep my distance. That's treating it as a message. That's very useful. It can call for an extra alertness. It can call for like non-agreement, not going on. You're going to buy a house from this person, and yet there's a kind of fear that arises when you're with that person. Don't buy the house from that person. Find another house. You know, anything like this. Buying an automobile. Letting someone, clean your furnace, and you feel a kind of unease. Don't let them clean your furnace, even if you have to pay them for the appointment. You know, I'll tell people with body work, if someone puts their hands on you, I'm a big believer in body work, helping us develop greater awareness and health and all these reasons for body work. But if someone puts their hands on you and you feel fear, thank them and get off the table. I was at a meeting of some sort of social group of it was a non-profit group of something, leaders from some non-profit, and I was doing some teaching there. And as part of the thing of my being a teacher, I got a bodywork session. And so this guy comes, and he's putting his hands on me, and I start feeling uneasy. And he's still doing his work, and I'm getting more uneasy. And I go, well, how's your day today? And he goes, it's been a good day. And I said, any challenges of the day? He says, no. He says, other than the bicycle, I had a little bicycle wreck coming down here to work on you, but otherwise it's been a great day. He was putting his physical trauma from that wreck in my body. He should never have gone ahead and done that session. But he wasn't sophisticated enough, or he was greedy over the money, whatever, I don't know. I said, you know, I'm really finding myself, I'm just restless, so let's just don't do this. Happy to sign for it and all of this, but no thanks. His trauma was going into my body. Likewise, you can be having lunch with someone, and they're putting their anxiety into you. And what you have to do is find the way that's appropriate to handle that. If you tend to be over-identified with this person, or if you're trying to be nice to them, but you're really, if you're being inappropriate, then that fear, you're staying in that fear in an inappropriate way. When we're mindfully working with fear, we start with being mindful that it is an emotional state that's based on a perception. Coming from any sense gate, we can see something that makes us fearful. Often, if there's a past trauma, some act that has some association with that past trauma will elicit a fear response. That could be completely, it's just a fear response from the past. It's not really appropriate in this moment. So we go, oh, this is just this old association, once again, rearing its head. So, but we know it's an internal, subjective experience. It's subjective because we don't know if it's inappropriate or not. We're making a subjective response to conditions, that perceived conditions, and so it can be actual and appropriate, reality based or distorted, an overreaction, a misinterpretation, and again, it can come through any sense gate, whatever. One that you might not think of as an easy example is smell. So if you've gotten sick from mold, you have a smell that sort of smells like mold, and you can have an immediate fear reaction. And the fear reaction is so strong, you don't know if there's really mold there or not. I had the person I worked with for some time who really has struggled with this because they had to travel a lot, and they'd go into a room, and a hotel room, and they'd go, oh, there's something wrong in this room. But it was so, they really had huge sickness, but then was it true or not? they really couldn't be sure. And it took us months and months and months before this person gained confidence. And their nervous system was not in an overreactivity around a perceived source of fear. You still following? This is all normal. This is all normal. You're not, if this is any of this, this seems like touches to you and your relationship to fear, it's all normal. I'm not saying anything at all that's not outside the range of normal. I won't use examples like that. It's hard enough to deal with fear anyway. So, again, mindfully being aware of fear coming into the body, there's a kind of objective skepticism when it's not immediate danger. Again, the car coming at you, walking down the street, and you go, I shouldn't be here. You immediately respond to that. That's a feeling that, you know, like all sorts of things. You know how to do that. But so that when there's space, it's just you're fearful in general, then you cultivate a kind of mindfulness that's got, is this true or not? You're investigating. You're not dissing yourself, looking to judge and compare yourself. You're engaging in discernment. Is my feeling appropriate or not in this? Do I have to have this response to it? Like this is something like, okay, in the long term, but is this an immediate thing? You do all this kind of mindfully asking with kindness and with compassion towards oneself. Not judging, not comparing, but just wanting to know what's true. And then we want to contextualize our fear. Is this a kind of concern? And so it can be just, oh, there's concern, that level of fear. I got this unexpected opportunity to attend a 10-day retreat with Longpo Sumedho, with the Venerable Sumedho, Ajahn Sumedho. And I'd been sick for at least 3 years, and I was just starting to get better. So I had a level of concern about being on airplanes for so long. And I realized that once I was going to go to Thailand, I should go ahead and go to see the teacher I studied the Nine Bodies teachings with in India. And I had another level of concern about that because the conditions were more uncertain. So I had a level of concern. Was I fearful? No. But if you want to put concern on one end of the spectrum of fearfulness and total fear on the other end, that's fair to have all of that be the spectrum of fear. You see? So concern. And so what we sometimes realize is that in certain areas of our life, that what would the appropriate response is concern, we're actually going into fear. But there's really no need to go into fear. But it's just, we're so reactive in this area that concern is getting distorted. We are distorting it like this way. So we could start with concern, and then there's a kind of anxiety that we have. There's a little bit of agitation. It's a little anxiety around something, giving a talk or undergoing a medical procedure. Medical procedures go wrong. So a certain level of anxiety is reasonable. But if that anxiety is causing us to be to not do the medical procedure or to not have our good judgment as to who should do it, to just give up on ourselves. So I did a training for a group of people, and someone there is their wife called and said, "Oh, the doctors told me that that the medicine's not working for my glaucoma, and that I'm going to lose my eyesight." And there was a kind of helplessness around that. But there was somebody else in the training that said, "That's not true. You can do things about that. You're not going to lose your eyesight. You can do." And lo and behold, that person helped get a doctor's appointment with someone they had worked with, and it turned out, yes, there was things that could be done. But their doctor had told them the wrong thing, and the first response of the person who had been told all this was a resignation. So we can have our fear of this can make us move to an acceptance rather than seeing, is there other choices? This is very common in the medical world, I'm sorry to report, based on what I hear. So there's concern, now there's anxiety, and then there's this kind of full-blown state of fear. And then that fear can collapse into a panic. And that panic, it's traumatizing, and we go into fight, flight, or freeze, and so often can't come out of it because it was such a traumatizing event that we now carry around in an ongoing way this trauma reaction of fight, flight, or freeze that we go into it. Anytime we get into that area, and there's a whole now psychological profession that's large degree somatic based that's risen in how to deal with this trauma. I do want to take this as a moment to say that around fear, in my view, and not everybody in the professions, I'm trained in mindfulness and trained in watching the human mind. I'm not claiming to be a psychological trained person in some way that some profession has a view of things. I respect different views. But in relation to fight, flight, or freeze, those aren't all the ones that I ask people to notice. I ask them to notice that there's numbness. There can be a kind of numbness that arises. And the original trauma was, the original fear was that was at that panic level, that's gotten numb. So when animals do that shivering, you can watch animals like you watch the Animal Kingdom Channel, if there still is such a thing. They'll shiver and all this. That shaking off is they're shaking off that kind of over response and the kind of freeze that's there in the cell. And when I ask you to shake, here I'm doing the same thing with you. And that way, that shaking has that kind of feeling for us. We're now starting to see in these testing that's coming up. So the noticing that there's a numbness that the shivering would have been a very useful thing to avoid that numbness happening. And the other thing that can happen is a kind of a low-grade disassociation around that trauma and a kind of denial. So one goes into a disassociation and one doesn't really know one doesn't recognize it as dissociation. But it's a fear response in my view. Again, I'm not arguing some pedagogical approach to this. I'm saying, working with people all the time that I do, that I see this disassociation. And when I question them, or it shows up later in their meditation, they realize that this is a low grade, or not so low grade intensity of disassociation that came from an original trauma experience. And they are sitting there in their meditation and they're not quite present. Again, for those of you who've studied in the nine bodies, they're not staying in the emotional body, they're going to the astral body, for instance, things like that, that level of consciousness. So there's different levels of this. There's a big distinction between the specifics of a fear to a given situation and a given moment, and then a general anxiety to fear in that area, and then a general reaction of fear in a lot of areas because of one area in one single time. There's also a difference between this specificity of fear versus the general anxiety versus the existential levels of fear. So we can have a fear of old age, sickness, and death. That's existential. And that's what the Buddha was talking about, the three messengers. That we use it as a message rather than being afraid. I had an earlier discussion with someone today around fear of death. And the way that fear can start be determining things now, but you're not at the moment of death right now, so why not take it as a message in how to live into life rather than staying in your fearfulness of death or the dying process. So many people identify their fear as fear of the pain of the dying process. It's not so clear sometimes whether that's really what's the most fearful or what's easier to imagine, that it's the fear of the painful process. I don't know. You have to figure that out for yourself. But there's, and so in addition to that, there's the fear of uncertainty. And if there's a kind of dread that we have around old age, sickness, and death, that's the form that it's taking, the feeling of dread. That's how it's being known. We could also have this dread of uncertainty, because life is so uncertain. And we're afraid of the uncertainty, and we've not recognized it. But it's just uncertain. It's just uncertain. To make more out of it is because we're wanting it to be other than it is. If we, the training in the Buddha Dhamma is that we can be with what is. We're learning how to be with what is. And therefore, uncertainty is just another condition. And it is one of the forms of dukkha in the First Noble Truth. Dukkha of physical and emotional pain, but then the dukkha of everything's changing. It's uncertain. What's this next moment going to be for each of us right now? It's uncertain. It's uncertain, are we going to get home safely? It's uncertain, are we going to be in a good mood later on or not in a good mood? It's all uncertain. And this can be, we can start to have a dread about that uncertainty and not recognize it, and therefore it makes it much worse. Don't have to be, it's just uncertainty. It's just uncertain. That is no easy thing to really be able to live as the truth. But we can live with it. We can learn to live with it through our practice. We can have a dread of that our life is going to feel meaningless, or feel that life has been meaningless, or that we, at the time we're going to die, that we're going to feel like, oh, it was all meaningless. And this is a kind of a dread too. That's a little different than old age, sickness, and death. We can be afraid that we're going to feel as though our life was wasted, that any moment we're going to feel as though our life was wasted. And again, this can all be dealt with through our practice. Each of these would be a whole Dharma talk in themselves around dealing with one of these, so can't do that. But to bring in the room, because the person that was requesting the talk on fear didn't say exactly what aspect, so I had to cover the waterfront. And I've done my best of doing that. And so we use mindfulness as our tool, but mindfulness with compassion and this intentional mindfulness. Mindfulness that's based on our deepest values, that we're bringing mindfulness into the intention of this moment. So we're being mindful of what? Mindfulness of what's true as related to from our deepest values. That's an intentional mindfulness. That's an intentional life. And I talk about compassion as part of that. Jack has started talking about loving awareness as the word he uses. But I prefer this compassion, this kindness, these words, compassion. They're all good words. And so, but just what works for me, like I know what I mean when I say kindness and compassion. So you have your own words. And then there's a thing which I will talk about another time because we can't do it tonight. But I maybe when I'm here in January, about the difference between recognition and choice and choosing. And mindfulness is made up. Mindfulness practice is made up of those three things. Mindfulness allows you to recognize what's true. And you realize that you have choice. Mindfulness allows you to realize that you have choice. So oftentimes we can be mindful of something. We recognize, oh, this is wanting. This, I'm clinging to this. I'm clinging to my view. But we don't have the realization, oh, there's choice here. We actually just keep clinging to the view. I've been teaching all of these decades now, and I'm only now recognizing the degree that this is true, that people have the mindfulness, but then they don't realize they have choice, and that we maybe failed to emphasize in our teaching that it's not just being mindful of what is, but likewise that you have choice, or you don't have choice, that you're able to recognize is their choice or not. And then finally, this capacity, that you realize you have the capacity to choose, that not just that there is choice, but that you right now, you have this will that you can choose, that you can move towards actual choice. And you can be caught in fear, and you recognize, oh, I'm caught in fear. But now, do I really have any choice around this? Sometimes, no. You're just lost in fear, and you've got to wait it out. But other times, you realize, oh, there's some space around this. And the more you're recognizing, the more space you're creating. So there's some distance between you and the fear. You're not bound together anymore. Oh, there's some space. Oh, I'm still identifying with this fear, but actually there's space around it. So if there's space around it, and I'm not really totally identified with it, am I sure there's not any choice here? Oh, yeah. Yeah, there is some choice. But oh, it's so fascinating, this fear or whatever. And then, oh, I know. So, yes, there is choice, but I have to willfully, mindfully make that choice to move away from a relationship of this stimulant is fearful. I have to mindfully do that. And I will talk more about that sooner or later in here. So let's recognize, realize that there's choice, and then this movement towards the choice. As we go into the holidays, I would really recommend that for you, because the holidays create so much feelings of anxiety, of fear, of discomfort, and this. So we will do that another time. I want to end tonight, cutting the last third of my talk off, I want to end tonight with something I've done for people around a mantra for fear. And so this is a mantra that I've offered to people recently that I've worked with around fear. And maybe if somebody could write it down, and you could put it on your website or something, as a, so that people don't have to try to remember it. And it's four lines, and you can change, you can make it a single line, or you can do two lines. The first line works by itself. The first two lines work by themselves. And then you can change any of the lines, and maybe the last two lines you want to make shorter, or you want to do something totally different with. But the one that people have reported they've used this successfully. And the first line is, I am not this fear. This fear is neither me nor mine. I'm not this fear. This fear is neither me nor mine. Do you see already you're starting to create space around it? This fear is arising based on conditions. It's arising based on conditions. It's not you. It's a mind state. All mind states are impermanent. You can prove that to yourself in any 5 minutes by watching all the different mind states that arise. It's not hard to determine that truth of that. This fear is arising based on conditions. This, when these conditions changed, this fear will be released. Different ways. I've tried that in the last line different ways. This is one I'm using right now. So, I'm not this fear. This fear is neither me nor mine. This fear is arising based on conditions. When these conditions change, this fear will be released. This fear will be released. When these conditions change, this fear will be released. So let's say this together for a moment. I'll do it as call and response. I am not this fear. This fear is neither me nor mine.
This fear is neither me nor mine.
Isn't that satisfying? Isn't that really satisfying? I find it very satisfying. I create all these things based on my own experience. This was from a long time ago for me. And you could do the same thing with anger. I'm not this anger. This anger is neither me nor mine. Or whatever, any other emotion like that. I am not this fear.
I am not this fear.
This fear is neither me nor mine.
This fear is neither me nor mine.
This fear is arising based on conditions. When these conditions change, fear will be released. Thank you. Thank you for your attention.